can dust it off and try again and try again. Cause if at first you don't succeed, you can dust it off and try again. Dust yourself off and try again and try again. Again to you, you and to me, but I can't let it go so easily.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jefferson Cowie, a professor of history at Cornell University. He's the author of Capital Moves, RCA's 70-Year Quest for Cheap Labor, The Long Exception, An Interpretation of the New Deal from FDR to Obama, and Staying Alive, the 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class. His interest focuses on workers and the problems of social class in the post-war United States, as well as issues in international and comparative history. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jefferson Cowie.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for having me.
And I was puzzled by the Democratic Convention and its failure to draw a sufficiently clear distinction between the party of the oligarchs, represented by an exemplar of the 1%, Mitt Romney, and the party of the middle class and working Americans, whose main legacy is a social safety net that is under attack. Why do you think Obama and the Democrats were still reaching out to the disappearing center in this country and not arousing the 99% who have been downsized and outsourced?
You know, that's the question of the last 30 years, the post-Reagan phenomenon question. But you'd think at this point it would be like shooting fish in a barrel to go after these guys. But I really think that the Democrats have been campaigning and governing from a position of fear for the last several decades. They really think that this country has gone so far right that they need to accommodate to this order. Plus, of course, needless to say, all the money that they've been taking from the corporate wing of the party since Clinton and even before. So they do face a genuine struggle around these cultural value issues and questions of religious values and things like that. And until they can begin to recast even those value questions as economic questions, to be able to begin to say that, you know, your family's values have to do with economic security, they're really never going to win on a big scale. They're always going to be playing on the other guy's field and losing on the other guy's field.
Well, in a conversation I just had with Gar Upovitz, we talked about what appears to be, at least in terms of polls, a fairly good likelihood that Obama will retain the presidency. But that doesn't mean that the Democrats will retain the House and even the Senate, because of the enormous amounts of money that the super PACs, Karl Rove and the Koch brothers, are pouring into these, both the House and Senate, and more importantly, at the state level. And Upovitz was talking about, you know, this is a long plan that they have, that the oligarchs have, of capturing local state government and the federal government. And this indicates perpetual gridlock.
I would agree. It was refreshing to hear Gar talk about what was coming up from below. And I really think that without that kind of sustained pressure, movement building, alternative institution building that he's been pushing for some time, really takes root deeply, there's not going to be a counterbalance to that oligarchic situation. I mean, right now, if you read the DNC's message, it was, look, we are better managers of a neoliberal economy than those guys are. And they are, actually. I mean, the Democrats are better. They're better neoliberals than are the Republicans. And I think they deserve to win because of that. It's not enough, though. And I think we all know that. And the project is to really kind of shatter that existing paradigm and begin to build in a direction that a lot of us, you know, probably too many people thought was going to happen in 2008 without a lot of grassroots work.
Well, but isn't that the puzzle here, Jefferson Cowie? Why, you know, we all know that this is not 2008 in terms of the enthusiasm gap. There's a lot of enthusiasm on the Republican side some of it quite poisonous and racist, but there's no comparable enthusiasm on the Democratic side, at least compared to 2008. And I think it gets back to the question of what happened when Obama came in with hope and change, and given what the Wall Street had done to the economy, which was the worst beating that had taken since the Great Depression, there was some expectation of a new deal, and it didn't happen. And instead, we've been on the defensive, trying to hold on to what little of the social safety net we have. And I don't understand how that the Democrats haven't taken a populist stance.
Well, the minute you saw Obama's cabinet, you knew that the direction this administration was going to go, that this was not going to be a new deal. Obama came out early and said, we don't need a new Glass-Steagall to separate banking and finance. He ran away from the Employee Free Choice Act. There were a whole series of signals that this was explicitly not going to be a new deal. And as I've argued over and over again, that I actually think the new deal as a kind of paradigm isn't serving us well in terms of political organizing. It's too backward-looking. We need to begin to reimagine alternatives that are not grounded in the past. If you think about the progressives who actually built the New Deal, came out of the Progressive Era and then had the opportunity to build those institutions in the Great Depression, they weren't looking back to, greenbackism or the Knights of Labor or whatever. They were trying to create a system that worked for modern industrial capitalism. And I think we need to begin to sort of think about alternatives rather than constantly looking backward to the types of things that FDR and the CIO and all that rest of those movements did in the 1930s. We begin to try and figure out alternatives that are more forward-looking.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Jefferson Cowie, Professor of History at Cornell University, the author of Capital Moves, RCA's 70-Year Quest for Cheap Labor, The Long Exception, An Interpretation of the New Deal from FDR to Obama, and Staying Alive, the 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class. Well, surely, though, if we're going to have gridlock because the oligarchs are buying and have essentially bought the legislative process, and uh-huh. and if we barely sort of squeak by with a sort of a centrist president on the Democratic side who's sort of holding the line against a complete oligarchic takeover, even though he's somewhat compromised. He swept into power on because of the collapsed economy, but also of the message of hope and change. If you're going to end gridlock, the only way you're going to end gridlock is to create a powerful popular movement. And I didn't see them reaching out for that movement at the convention.
No, well, it's also the convention's too late, too. I don't just blame Obama. I think he might have been. There was a chance there for him to have been more responsive had there been more social pressure. But I think a lot of people of goodwill, sort of sat back and thought hope and change is going to be delivered to their doorstep without having to roll up their sleeves and push the administration in the direction it needed to go. And I think Obama sent some signals that he would need that in order to push back. I'm not just going to blame the administration, but I think we all need to think about what we can do, especially in the second administration and second term. I mean, maybe as a lame duck, we got a couple of years here before he becomes completely. We put him on the shelf. Maybe we can get something done.
Well, I think that's exactly the point, though, isn't it? It reminds me, Jefferson Cowie, of what happened back in the 1970s with the end of the Vietnam War, which was ended by popular pressure and a very, very powerful anti-war movement that became a potent political force. And as soon as Nixon ended the war, all of that sort of political energy seemed to just dissipate and go away. And it's interesting to note that at the moment that the Vietnam anti-war movement was powerful, That was when the famous memo was written by Justice Powell to the Chamber of Commerce of how to, reinvent a kind of a corporate to political takeover of the United States, which has been incredibly successful. So on the one hand, the corporatist backlash to the 70s has worked, you know, absolutely perfectly for them. But the populist power just dissipated, and it seems to be fickle.
Right. Well, the 70s are, very interesting. I actually think it was sort of, how in football they say this is anybody's game. The 70s were sort of anybody's decade for a while. There's tremendous mobilization among labor and social movements and things like that, the anti-war movement, especially in the first half of the decade. And at the same time, as you're saying, the business class, business roundtable, the Nixon administration, wings of the Democratic Party, all began to panic that those groups were getting too much power and they needed to get organized as well. And so, there's a real contest over ideas and hearts and minds in the early 70s that was really rich. And I actually think might have gone anyway. I was interviewing an activist once on the 70s who said, I knew it was either going to be a corporate takeover or socialism by the end of the decade. I didn't know which. And that sort of captured some of that open-endedness. So I'm always a little leery of saying, the business elite saw the moment and captured it. I actually think they had a fight like hell for it, and they won. We ended up with Carter and Reagan. But point being, there was a genuine contest there. And the business class really did see that it had to get organized in order to reestablish itself in control, and it has for the last several decades. And I was hoping that this most recent crash was an opportunity to begin to reevaluate the paradigm that those guys built. But so far, it's just been a slightly kinder, gentler version, or worse, just picking up the pieces of what a disaster the Republicans have made of it.
Well, just in closing, Jefferson Cowie, the people who thought that Obama was the miracle worker and simply by voting for hope and change it would happen, and then they just sort of walked away and went back to their lives, which is pretty much how we operate in this country in terms of politics. We don't live and breathe it. It's something we do every couple of years out of duty, like going to the dentist. The 99% movement showed some signs of creating an alternative to the corporatization and the capture of this country by oligarchs, but that's about it.
That's one of the sort of bitter ironies of this whole consumer culture, is that it has infiltrated our politics and our political soul in a way that we just think we have to show up, make a choice, and walk away. And it's not an issue of constant power, pressure, and discussion, and analysis, and meetings, and organizing. And I think that was one thing that the Occupy movement really, really made clear and really galvanized. I mean, you still see the 1% rhetoric used all the time, that Romney's the candidate of the 1%. And so I think they actually did have an impact, right? I think they did change the discourse in an important way, but it never quite made the jump that needed to be made to regular working people.
Yeah, but the fact that a 1%er could actually win this election, it's not totally out of the woods. That's what's mind-blowing, it'll happen by default because those that showed up in 2008 simply won't show up.
Right, I know, and it's truly scary. I mean, I think everybody's got to get out and vote. I do think I've always thought Obama was going to win this election. I think he will, but it's not enough in any way, shape, or form.
Well, but you got all those Senate and House races too, and the Kochs and Karl Rove are spending unlimited money to get their corporatists in.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting what they did in Massachusetts, is spending the outside money, making that Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren making that deal not to accept the outside money, and it seems to have made that race a richer, more interesting race.
Well, I thank you for joining us here, Jefferson Cowie.
Always my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Jefferson Cowie. He's a professor of history at Cornell University. He's the author of Capital Moves, RCA's 70-Year Quest for Cheap Labor, The Long Exception, an Interpretation of the New Deal from FDR to Obama, and Staying Alive, the 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.